It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to the 10 o'clock hour of Money Matters. 41 degrees on Peachtree. It's going to warm up a little bit. Not too much. Beautiful day today so far. And a lot of great calls. Questions. 404-872-0750 is the number here in the studio. We've talked about the underlying tide, the job economy, what that means for the Fed. And the Fed, whether they raise rates a bunch or not, has a lot to do with how we play out the rest of 2016. So we've got to pay attention to what the Federal Reserve is doing. And they're going to be data dependent. They're going to continue to say we're data dependent. That just means that they're not going to do anything unless they feel as though the economy can handle it, meaning they're not going to ratchet rates up unless things start to really overheat. We had a good jobs number on Friday, but not a great one. So not an overheating one. Just, yeah, we added about 151,000 jobs. That's a good number, but it's not 250. It's not 300. If that were the case, the Fed would start to panic, likely, and really ratchet up interest rates. And it would could cause some havoc in the economy. Interest rates go up, that means the U.S. dollar could go back up, which it actually took a hiatus from doing that last week and actually went down. Oil and the dollar are inverse. So if oil goes up or continue, or I'm sorry, if the dollar continues to go up because our rates are higher here and money flows into the United States, that means oil prices could continue to go down. And instead of this $30 area that looks like we're trying to settle at, we go all the way down to 25 or 20. And then that has havoc on the energy sector. More havoc than that creates defaults. Then you worry about energy stocks. It could hit the stock market. Then you have the consumer starts to back away a little bit because of confidence. And then that could be a self-fulfilling prophecy for recession. As of now, I don't see that happening because the Federal Reserve's not, doesn't seem to be overly emphatic that they're going to start ratcheting up rates anytime too quickly or too soon. They seem to be very patient, and that's what we want. That's what we want out of them. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. You are tuned into Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning. You can find me and the Money Matters team, several ways to do it, wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. You can email me, radio@yourwealth.com. Plenty of ways to find me, even on Twitter, if anybody uses that, at Wes Moss 365. Let's go to the phones. Bob joins us, I think, all the way from the great state of Peachtree City.
Hey, thanks, Wes, and congratulations on the new edition.
Well, we're almost there, but not yet, Bob. But thank you. How can I help?
I had a question. Back in 98, my company offered a lump sum buyout and, come forward as I get closer to retirement, 2-3 years away. I understand there's an annuity option now. And for all these years, I've planned on doing the lump sum, but and I actually looked on your website and did the 6% number math treatment that you suggest, and it came out 6.23. So just
you're wondered, on the line. You're on the line.
Yeah, and so I just wondered if that thinking had changed, or and I don't have any underlying medical issues or anything that would force me into a lump sum necessarily because of shortened lifespan or anything. So, what do you think? I do have some deferred comp that's going to be playing out over 10 years, and then a 401k and all that. So it's kind of a three-legged stool. And just wondered if taking the annuity made more sense than the monthly pension.
It's going to come down to all the tiebreakers. So the headline here, and for everyone that is wondering what Bob just, and Bob, you give a really nice quick explanation about this. The way I typically calculate whether it's a good deal or not to take a pension, a monthly pension versus a lump sum, I do the quick math. So, and let's just say it's $1,000 a month. That means it's $12,000 a year. Or you could take a lump sum that is, let's call it $200,000. Which one would you take? Well, that's a 6% rule. Now, you just divide those numbers, 12 divided by 200,000. So that's a pretty good rate of return that you would be, quote, guaranteed for the rest of your life from the pension. If I were, let's make the numbers a little more extreme, 1,000 a month, that's 12 grand a year, or they were offering me 100 grand, which one's a better deal? Well, that's a 12% technically it's a 12% guaranteed rate of return for the rest of my life if I take the monthly amount. So I would say, you know, that's a pretty good number. It's a really good number. I would be much better just to take the lump sum, make sure I do a period certain, meaning that if I died tomorrow, my heirs would still get money for at least another 10 or 20 years, depending on what option you choose or you want to go with. But let's do another extreme. Let's say that I'm going to get $1,000 a month or $300,000 lump sum. Now, that's only a 4% rate of return, meaning that if I take the $300,000 instead of the $12,000 a year, all I need to do is get a 4% rate of return, and I've got my 12 a year. So why would I ever not take the lump sum? And the test comes down to what Bob's talking about here is that it's got to be, in order to take the monthly amount, it's got to be at least 6% or higher. Where Bob is confused here is that his number is smack dab on that, on the Mason-Dixon line, if you will. And you've got to, and it's going to be these other factors that come into play to tip the scale in one direction or the other. So obviously you're going to have, it sounds like you've been working, so you'll probably have a decent social amount every month for Social Security, right?
Yes.
Are you married, and does your wife have Social Security?
Yes, but she hasn't worked for a long time, so it's going to be a small amount. Okay. If I push it off to 70, it's like 3,500. If I take it at 66 in 7 months, it's 2,850.
And, well, what are the numbers here? What's the monthly amount on this pension they're offering versus the lump sum?
5735
a month.
A month.
Wow. Okay. So we know in reverse what the lump sum means then, right? So 5735 divided by 0.6, that means it's a big lump sum. It's 950 grand. So am I right?
Yeah, a little larger. Yeah.
Okay.
You're right.
So then I guess it goes back to, here's the tiebreaker, I think, for you. What are the other assets? Because here's the other thing you don't want to do, and this is where it comes into the balance of how do you create your income. You don't want to have all this pension money, and even though it might be enough every month, and then no liquidity, meaning that there's no money to then go get if I need it in an emergency. And then there's the whole, hey, I'd like to be able to pass some money on to my heirs, too. And if you take a pension amount, then you, to some extent, you're making the decision that you're not going to pass a whole lot of money on to your heirs. So I think that might be the tiebreaker here. Bob, do you have a bunch of kids, no kids?
Three.
And then do they have kids?
Six grandbabies and one on the way.
Man, they're going to probably want you to take the lump sum, Bob. but do you have other, here's the question. Do you have other assets that are similar to this? Do you have plenty of other liquidity?
Other than a 401k and some deferred comp, that's it.
Mm. Well, here's another question on these tiebreakers. Can you do a partial? Can you take $500,000 as a lump sum and $3,000 a month?
Yeah. I think the, when I looked at it, since it's a large company and they go out and buy annuities in big chunks, they get a really good deal. And when I looked at what I could do or go through a financial planner to do for the same money, the annuity or the monthly was quite a bit less.
And so again, that is another big consideration. So $5,700 a month times 12 is $68,000. If something were to happen to the company, the PBGC would come in and cover a big chunk of that, but not all of it. But it's you're talking about a company that you have no worries about their solvency in the next 20, 30 years?
None.
Okay. So then again, that's the other huge consideration that you can't take for granted. You got to say, gosh, but you got to look at their ability to continue to pay for all these years. And if they can't, can PBGC, which is the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, come in and make you whole? I've actually seen this happen recently. I've gotten some calls about multi-employer plans where you might be a union that might cover 30 companies and then a pension plan that covers all these different companies. But as far as a actual standalone company for pensioners, I don't know of any examples that even though if they went out of business, that PBGC didn't come in. So it's a very safe proposition.
Okay.
Historically, to go ahead and take the monthly. So I, from our conversation, six plus. Now, by the way, let me ask this: is that the joint spousal, or is that just your life number?
No, that's the joint.
Wow, spousal. That's the joint is over six. The joint spousal. Gosh, I would be. I would tell you, I'd probably take at least. I would try to. If it were me, knowing what I know now in our brief call, I'd probably lean towards splitting it. Meaning that I probably take half pension in a month and still take close to the $500,000 to roll over into an IRA and have that in my estate, and that ensures that at least I'm passing something on. So that would be my tiebreaker. If they let you do that, a lot of plans will allow that.
They don't. It's an all or nothing proposition.
All or nothing. How much? What do you think your monthly expenses are going to be?
Probably about $2,500, $2,800 at the most.
Total.
Yeah.
Wow. And your Social Security is going to take care of that.
Yeah.
Man, that's another tiebreaker. If that's the case, then you don't necessarily need the income. Meaning that if you do take the pension, you're always going to be in a really high bracket, tax bracket. If you take the lump sum and you put it in an IRA, you can just trickle out what you need and keep your overall tax bracket low. So again, I don't think there's never a perfect answer here. I think if it were me, knowing your spending need is really low, then you might be paying too much in taxes or more taxes than you need if you take the monthly amount. And you've got this $6,000 a month in income for the rest of your life plus Social Security, you're going to always be in a really high tax bracket, Bob. So
yeah.
I think the scales then just tip back towards taking the lump sum. But again, this is something that you'll probably spend a lot of time considering. If it were the Super Bowl today between taking the monthly and taking the lump sum amount wins by an extra point.
Okay.
All right, Bob, listen, have a great rest of your day, my friend.
Thank you.
You're listening to Money Matters. Straight ahead, news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Sunshine today, high 56, low 35. Brought to you by Shoemate Heating and Cooling. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. WSB Radio, the number in the studio, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We're going to Chuck, who joins us from Lawrenceville. Chuck, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. What's
How
going
you?
On?
How are you today?
Great. How can I help?
Well, I've got a combined retirement of about, a nest egg of about $550,000. That's down from about $600,000. $300,000 of it is in a 401k through my former employer, and I have an additional roughly $250,000 with a brokerage operation that's spread amongst some funds and some individual stocks. And overall, over the past year or so, it's gone down about 8-9% total, and I am currently invested in some oil and energy stocks and funds, and obviously that's taken the biggest hit.
That's taken a big hit. That has.
And I didn't know if it was wise to roll the 401k into something like an IRA, although I'm pleased with the funds that are afforded me. I've got it all in Vanguard funds, whether you need to know that or not.
Well, here's the deal, Chuck. I'll tell you what. We're coming up to a news, weather, traffic break. This is a good resting point. I'll answer your question. So I need you to hang on. We'll figure out what to do with these two accounts and the mix. We'll talk energy stocks for a minute, but hold tight, Chuck.
Okay.
Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. 44 degrees on Peachtree. Lively morning here in the studio. 35 minutes after the hour. And the number here to chat, talk, question, second opinion, you name it, the world as it swirls along with the market. We're here to help you through it here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. Ryan Ely and I, Wes Moss, your host, certified financial planner, to take your calls and your questions. 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Chuck was already joining us on the line. He was calling in talking about a 401k and his balance. And I think the if I give you a quick recap here, Chuck, so we don't go over it completely, but pretty quickly, you've got $300,000 in a 401k and then $250,000 in a brokerage account outside of the 401k. And you're talking about rebalancing, repositioning these two because you're experiencing some, it's down because of the market supposedly, but what's the crux of your issue, do you think, Chuck?
Well, I'm 68. I don't have to really draw down on this for at least another 2 years, I don't think, unless something catastrophic would happen. I have some cash in a savings account that I can draw on if I need a few extra dollars now and then. And, you know, I know that I kind of got caught in the middle with being not a lot in energy, but in, say, 15%, 20% in energy stocks and mutual funds I have. And so that's taken a big hit.
That's something that I think a lot of people are worried about right now.
Sure.
Is that exposure to the energy patch. So let's just talk about that for another quick, let's dive into that with you just for 1 second. Again, and this is coming in a week, and I didn't even talk about this today. I thought we'd talk about it more, but big news this week was that Exxon's profit dropped almost 60%. They're back to levels of 02, 13, 14 years ago. And then they're going to hold off on their buyback plan. Royal Dutch Shell, their profit down 60%. ConocoPhillips slashed their capital spend and their dividend from 74 cents all the way down to a quarter, 25 cents, a quarter. So you're seeing some pain in the even the big boys, so even the really stable, healthy balance sheet oil and energy companies. Now, that's very different. That's a far cry from the E&P companies, exploration production. Now, those are the ones that are on the, that's where you're going to start to see some bankruptcies at some point, likely. For you, are you in blue chip energy that's gotten hit but will survive? Are you in some names that are really, really taking a gigantic hit?
Well, I'm in a spider. I've got...
XLE? You own XLE?
Let me see what exactly the name is. And I've got AGL. I've got... some of these are gas, some of these are oil, but, you know, mainly it's energy companies overall.
If you own XLE, which it sounds like you do, that's the spider ETF for the sector... It does. It really is highly leveraged to big energy companies. So it's got Exxon is the number one holding, Chevron number two, Schlumberger number three, EOG number four. So it's got it is weighted towards these really some of these. See, I would call them the more stable, healthier balance sheet companies. However, you go down the list, there's plenty of companies in here that have gotten crunched, really hurt, like Kinder Morgan.
Yeah,
and some of those MLP, those pipeline companies, are down a lot. Now, if you're down at this point, Chuck, to, you said what, 8% now, 7%, or is it?
It's about 8 to 10%, you know.
And if I go back to your
overall,
if your overall mix though, Chuck, are you mostly in stocks? Is it 70-80% stock? What's the balance?
8% in cash and the rest in stocks and. In the 401k, I've got one of those target funds, some allocation to that.
What kind of target fund? What year is it?
These are all Vanguard funds that I have in the 401k, and the target that target return is 2020.
Okay, so again, there's a fairly high level of equities in that. That's probably 60-70% in stocks too. So that makes sense. So that you're down about 10% over the last, call it, year.
Yeah.
Because you're more levered towards stocks. If that one account you said is a little less than 10% in cash, so call it almost 90% in equities. That's not unusual. And I think I can tell by our conversation that you're comfortable with that part of it. You know that the market's down. Part of being an investor as we go through these cycles. I think your question, though, goes back to, A, do you stay in energy? B, for the what to do with the 401k? Were you thinking about rolling that out into an IRA?
Not that I really needed to, but what I was thinking is it better to roll it into an IRA, say with Vanguard, and I'm just using that as a name brand because I'm more familiar with them, and then I'd have more options than the funds that are offered through the 401k that I have.
What's the 401k provider, Chuck? Is it a big? What's the provider? Fidelity, Mass Mutual, Prudential.
These are all Vanguard.
So you're already in Vanguard.
Yeah, through the 401k, through my company. Yeah.
Well, if you're already at Vanguard, that means you already have ultra low cost options.
Yes.
So you probably there's not a gigantic advantage of moving to a Vanguard IRA.
Okay.
Yes, you do open up your options because Vanguard, I think this is one thing about Vanguard. I think it's a little bit miscommunicated by them is that you roll into Vanguard, you stay in their 50 different Vanguard funds. Vanguard is just a gigantic holding tank now.
Sure.
So it's like Fidelity or Schwab where you can own anything you want. They're, primarily, I see people own Vanguard funds if they have a Vanguard IRA, but you can technically own anything you want to own at Vanguard.
Okay.
So yes, you're right. Your options do open up. I think that particularly as you get into deeper into retirement and you have a greater need, Chuck, for steady income producing securities, then I think that's one place Vanguard falls a little bit short. Not that Vanguard isn't fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a gigantic fan of Vanguard. I use plenty of their products, but they don't necessarily have as many specific income-oriented options as you would if you just had an IRA at Vanguard or Schwab and then chose to use some outside ETFs that weren't Vanguard, or maybe some individual companies, individual utility companies, individual energy companies, individual healthcare companies that can get you closer to that 3.5% to 4.5% dividend range that you might want. And I do think that if it were me, I typically go back to, hey, what would I do here in this situation? I probably, if you're thinking about expanding some of the options that are more income oriented, that I'd probably roll it over to Vanguard to just open up my options. So yes, I would do the rollover, keep it, go 401k to Vanguard IRA, then you have a little bit more flexibility. Number two, I wouldn't necessarily give up on energy. I would make sure that what I own is the blue chip space, meaning that we have no worry about these companies going out of business, which still the big boys like Chevron and Exxon are still fine. Their stock prices are pretty ugly, but they're not going away. So I wouldn't give up on that sector because we're going to have some stabilization, in my opinion, at some point sooner than later when it comes to oil prices. And then these companies get back to having their profit numbers actually go up as opposed to shrink dramatically. I think this, is this Garv Indicator? Is that how I pronounce this?
Yes, that's right.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can I help?
Hey, it's a pleasure talking to you. I enjoy all the stuff that you do, Wes. I appreciate you taking my call.
Thanks. How can I help?
So, you know, just a general question. I'm 37. My wife's 37. We have a 15-month-old daughter. We're self-employed, and for the last, 7 years, we finally reached kind of the breaking point in our business. We're actually paying ourselves an income.
Awesome. What kind of business, Garv, what kind of business, by the way?
I own a restaurant and food trucks.
Awesome. Cool. Okay. Indicator?
Indicator, and it's called Nectar. It's a juice smoothie sandwich place. I have food trucks that roll around the city, and Indicator, I have a restaurant.
Nice. How many years have you been doing, did you say, again?
8 years.
And wait, and you're just now being able to pay yourselves?
No, it's been about 3 years, you know.
Got it.
Which is, it's kind of a realistic hump point for restaurants. I mean, the restaurant business is not an easy one to get past that investment point and, you know, take back an actual income. So,
does your wife work with the business too? So you're both involved?
Yeah, we're both involved.
That's awesome. Okay.
So, that's why I'm kind of lost here. So we have finally put money into savings. We have an emergency account, so we've got that covered. If, you know, that we don't touch. But then beyond that, we're putting money into just savings right now. And for the last 3 years, we're putting money into an account that we want to start investing. But I'm so not sure as self-employed people where to start. If I should just get an IRA or a Roth IRA, you know, if I should... I'm not sure what the difference as a self-employed person is because of the benefits or, you know, I've looked at Vanguard. It's kind of overwhelming. Once you start looking out there, it's pretty crazy how many choices and how many avenues you can take.
It is, Garv.
A good starting point.
You're right about that. And then it's a little more complicated as a business owner because you say, well, if you're self-employed and you don't have employees, the easy choice is to do a SEP IRA, Simplified Employee Pensions, what that stands for. And you can basically put away 25% of your comp. So whatever, if you make 100 a year through being self-employed, you can put away 20 to 25,000 and it's pre-tax and it's a really good deal. Problem is, if you've got a bunch of employees, you got to do the same for them.
I have 6 employees.
Okay. So usually a SEP doesn't work at that level because that's a lot of money you're putting away for everybody else too.
Okay, gotcha.
So you're probably better off. So first of all, the easy thing to do, which is just individually for you and your spouse, is to do a Roth. Now, depending on your income, where do you approximately do you think you're in? Do you think your income will be below 220?
Yeah.
For the year. So then you and your spouse can do $5,500 each into a Roth. So that's the first 11 grand would go into Roth.
Uh-huh.
Then above that, if you want to start saving money, really saving money, then you're probably going to need to set up some sort of really low cost 401k plan for the business.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that without having to do a tremendously expensive match for everybody. A safe harbor 401k type of 401k plan you can set up for very inexpensively. You're still going to contribute probably around 3% for your employees.
Okay.
But that's a pretty small price to pay relative to a SEP where you'd put 25% away for them if you put 25% away for you. So you do give them some advantage, but it also allows you to put away a much higher number on a percentage basis. So it's probably a some sort of low-cost 401k that's a safe harbor type plan for the business. So you got to find the right provider for that. I've got a couple guys in town that do what are technically called startup 401k plans.
Uh-huh.
So shoot me an email this week and I'll give you a couple names of guys that do
that. That'd be awesome, yeah. And one more quick question for you. What about, so another thing that's overwhelming is if I should do like a 529 plan for my kid or open up an IRA in my name for her to grow. I'm caught in between the two.
You're 15 month old. Here's what I would do. Just use I would do the Georgia 529 plan. It's just the website is Path to College, the number 2.
Right.
And just start doing something. Do an auto $100-$200 a month to one of the state of Georgia 529 plan. I don't think you can go wrong there. My email, radio@yourwealth.com, or just go to Wes Moss, WESMOSS.com, contact button on the left-hand side. Those emails come straight to me, Garv. I'll get you some names to help with the 401k. You're listening to Money Matters right here, WSB.
Now back to Wes Moss with the money and investing advice you need.
We're broadcasting live from the great country of the United States of America, right here in the middle of Atlanta, adjacent to the great small town of Decatur. It's actually the city of Decatur. Our last call with Garv, owner of Nectar. Just sounded like a piece of America talking to Garv. Just a good entrepreneurial story. 8 years in the trenches running the business. Now he's really able to pay himself, able to save now for him, and maybe even, well, I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but maybe even set up a retirement plan. Sounds like America to me. I like it. So with that, we've talked a lot. I didn't even get to half of my content today that I was going to talk about. But bottom line here, the job economy is pretty good. It's not amazing. It's not terrible. It's kind of still in that fairway. Goldilocks, not too hot, not too cold. Means that the Fed's probably not getting too excited about ratcheting up interest rates overly quickly. They're going to still be data dependent, still wait and see, whatever you want to call it. Stay boring. That's fine. That's how we want them. That's how they are. Let's keep it that way. Let's not upset the apple cart any more than it's already naturally upset in any given day, month, year in the world that we live in. We saw the market drop this week down 261 points. That's 1.6% on the Dow. S&P 500 down 60 points, which was 3.1%. So the S&P 500 got hammered this week, down 8% year to date. So it has not been an easy year. Over 300 of the 500 companies in the S&P have reported. Overall earnings are down almost 5% this quarter, but a huge impact of that, or a huge part of that, is really energy companies. So energy earnings as a group are down 75%. Materials companies down 12%. If you look at consumer staples, you look at utilities, they're actually growing earnings 4-5% this year. So we've got a pretty interesting scenario here where you've got 20% of the economy is a mess, oil, materials, energy, and 80% of the economy is actually pretty good. That's a pretty unique scenario. The one thing that makes it so different than housing or subprime, so housing went bad, kind of anchored everybody down with it. Here, we've got a scenario where we've got this very heavy net positive to low oil prices. It's crushing the oil companies and their profits. It's helping the 300 million of us that are driving around in cars every day and saving, call it $1,500 a person per year on our gas bill. That's pretty significant. So for today. Let's go. We've got, if you want to find me and the Money Matters team throughout the week, easy to do so. Go to WesMoss.com, WESMOSS.com. There's a contact button on the left-hand side. Those emails come straight to me. Our Facebook page, Wes Moss Money Matters. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned for Adam Goldfein coming up straight ahead here on this Super Bowl Sunday. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.